From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Black and brown kids, low-income kids, every kid in this city should know, should grow up knowing they can pursue anything. They can love anyone. That's my Chicago dream. And I know we're just a little bit closer to that dream as I stand here today, inaugurated as Chicago's first black woman mayor and first openly gay mayor.
Lori Lightfoot cast her vision for change in Chicago, calling for unity and promising to make Chicago better and safer. But her primary focus on day one of her administration was reform in city government, and she put aldermen on notice she means what she says.
Lightfoot's pointed inaugural address did not sit well with 15th Ward Alderman Ray Lopez. He also does not support Lightfoot's executive order limiting his power.
For her, this solves the political issue that she made when she ran for office and said, I'm going to end aldermanic prerogative on day one.
The message from leaders is like, how many votes can you get? I said, I can't tell you that until I know exactly what we're dealing with. I know we're a few days out, but you know, things need to speed up. And Democrats, if they're looking for support from my caucus, I just can't go in with general statements.
That's the Republican House Leader Jim Durkin talking about prospects for getting a state budget, an infrastructure plan, a bunch of things that the legislature still needs to get done here in the next week. We also heard some coverage of the new Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot officially taking over. She was sworn in earlier this week, and we'll discuss all of that and more coming up on State Week. With me in the studios of NPR Illinois, on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS and a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us from our State House studio, our State House editor, Brian Mackey. And one of our guests today is Hannah Meisel with the Daily Line. She's at the Capitol as well. Hannah, good to have you on once again.
Glad to be here.
And Greg Hines joins us by phone. He's with Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's always nice to have you as well.
My pleasure.
And I'm Sean Crawford here in Springfield. Well, we're sitting down to record just 1 week away from the scheduled end of the legislature's spring session. Several unresolved items, and among them, one of the biggest, is getting a state budget in place. There's a lot of moving parts on that. Brian, you want to catch us up on where things stand right now?
Yeah, basically, things are yet to be resolved. The legislature is still pushing ahead with this graduated income tax. Of course, that doesn't have anything to do with the current year's budget, other than serving as sort of a convenient dodge to be able to say, well, this budget doesn't have to be, you know, as balanced as we might otherwise like it, because we're just building a bridge to the future when we'll have all this additional revenue from a graduated income tax. That's moving ahead. Lawmakers are still working out the details on other aspects of a state spending plan. I'm told that a lot of potential revenue increases are still in the mix, despite the big infusion of extra cash that came in April, $1.5 billion, people are calling the April surprise, and some additional revenue is expected to continue into next year because of that unexpectedly higher taxes. But Democrats say we still might need more revenue, still looking at some of these. The bag tax, though, as one example, is something that I've heard, Majority Leader Greg Harris said, not faring so well in terms of attracting support in the General Assembly.
And Greg, what are you hearing behind the scenes at this point?
Well, there is indeed some jostling back and forth over legalizing marijuana and whether we can count on that as a revenue source, and sports betting. One of the groups during the week actually, there's kind of an intramural fight amongst the gambling folks. One group was going to launch a $1 million campaign against another group. They pulled their ads at the last minute. But that adds a little bit of uncertainty. But if you step back and look at the wider thing, I think we're much closer to a budget than we have been for several years in a lot of ways. The Democrats know they have to get this done. There's a little bit of division about exactly what the mix is going to be, but I think the generalities are pretty likely.
Well, of course, J.B. Pritzker wants many of these things, and Hannah, the Democratic-controlled legislature is not going to, in his first term, leave him hanging, are they?
I don't think anyone wants to do that. That wouldn't do anything for unity within the Democratic Party. I mean, they just got the governor's office back after a really tough 4 years for them. But I mean, you know, it's interesting we're talking about the budget, but it's after 4 years of under Rauner, the budget was the main thing that everyone thought about. But, you know, there are now all of these side issues that are really proxy wars for the budget. But that's what is gaining all the attention. I am hearing that the budget is just actually just not going to be a big deal. People are probably going to be happy to vote for, you know, whatever. And it's these other, you know, more sexy promises, things that the governor promised on the campaign trail, a graduated income tax, cannabis. You know, it would really be an embarrassment for the governor's office if they can't get cannabis done before May 31st.
Charlie, they're not going to, as I mentioned before, they're not going to leave the governor hanging most likely, but something could drop off the table that could impact the budget, how much money there is to spend. What's your thought going, a week out?
Well, from what I can see, and I'm obviously not down there every day talking to these people, but from what Brian said about what Representative Harris, it seems to me that the plastic bag tax might be the first thing to go. I don't remember exactly how much it was supposed to bring in, somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, $10, $12 million? And it strikes me that for all the grievance that they're going to get when people go to the grocery store and have to pay extra, that's pretty small change in terms of the overall budget picture. And the fact that the revenues spiked so much in April means that they'll also have additional money to spend next year than what they thought when the governor proposed his budget. It's possible that something like the bag tax could go and not make any difference.
One thing that seems really iffy right now, to your question, Sean, is how the capital bill is going to pan out. The governor's office last Friday introduced a $41.5 billion capital plan. Of course, that's not all state money. That's, you know, a significant amount is federal. However, it's a what you'd call both horizontal, which is roads and bridges, and vertical, which is buildings and infrastructure. And right now it seems like, I mean, everyone sees the need for roads and bridges, but vertical is just a much heavier lift. And we are seeing a bunch of groups, you know, hire lobbyists over the last weekend, you know, a couple days. And there's this massive, massive lobbying effort against all of these new taxes that have been included in the capital plan that would fund vertical.
Yeah, I think Hannah's right about that. The core budget, I think, is in good shape. I'm not willing to bet yet, though, that the capital bill is gonna pass because I don't know about you folks, but I've been hearing from lobbyists and lobbying groups, and, this maybe passes tax, Western civilization is going to collapse about every 20 minutes. There indeed is some fire there. And I'm yet to be convinced that the legislature is going to suck it up and pass the stuff nonetheless.
And, Greg, when it comes to an infrastructure plan, there's no doubt that there's some need out there. But from a lawmaker perspective, they always want that close to the election, it seems. They want to be able to have those projects they can announce. Even if the projects aren't done, they can announce they're coming. So to some extent, if this does get pushed off a bit, next year is still a likely possibility, even with some of these different taxes being talked about to pay for it.
Yeah, that's a real possibility. But if I'm a lawmaker and I've got to run for a new term, I think it's equally important for me to be able to have certainty. You know, if the votes are there now and I can definitely lock in that new highway interchange or that new bridge now, there's no good reason for me to postpone. At least that's if I were in leadership or if I were in Pritzker's camp. That's the argument I would make.
Yeah, and to me, that's the key. Unlike a lot of other programs for which lawmakers will appropriate money that don't produce results that are immediately visible to the community, if I'm a lawmaker and I vote, say, to raise the gasoline tax, and I can go home and say, yeah, you're going to be paying more cents at the gallon, but on the other hand, that road that's mostly potholes, now it's going to be mostly road. And if I have projects like that that I can trot out, it makes it easier for me to explain my vote. And it makes it harder for people to criticize me. Somebody criticizes me, and I can say, you like the potholes? You want to keep the potholes?
But, Brian, this is also an opportunity for Pritzker to do some horse trading and say, hey, maybe we can get this project in here if you vote for this marijuana or this gambling package or something else. He can use a capital plan to get the votes needed on these other issues, right?
Yeah, that's the traditional way it's done. You have these earmarks. You have people who want this, whatever it is, a bridge in their district, an interchange, as Greg said. Although you also have this force this year pushing for a more data-based, sort of merit-based infrastructure building. And our colleague Mary Hansen has been doing some reporting on this. That story is still forthcoming. But know, that is sort of at odds with the idea of letting members pick and choose the projects they want, and it might cut into the horse trading. Part of the goal with the capital advocates here is to get away from the sort of one-time revenue sources, and they want to move to what they're calling a more sustainable model. So the gas tax would potentially doubling or more in some of the proposals we've seen, but it would also potentially be indexed to inflation, so it would go up over time, and you would get out of this sort of boom and bust building cycle where you pass a capital plan. In the past, it's been every 5 years. Now it's been 10 years since we've had one. So this is something where they think that they want to put Illinois on what they call a more sustainable path. It just complicates things a little further, though.
Let me move on to the issue of gambling. And Hannah, I know you've been covering that as well. At least some of the proposals we've seen to add casinos. We've seen the idea of sports gambling, sports betting being available, and the state would make money off of that as well. Where do we stand with that right now?
The language for it seems like it's going to be a big omnibus bill, Senate Bill, I believe, 516. There's a hearing on that Monday, Memorial Day, 8:30 in the morning. So pray for us. And, but I think I've talked to a lot of people this week. They're very upbeat. They say that it feels different this year. And I think that's mostly because the governor's office is open to all forms of gaming because they've looked at the budget shortfall and they've pretty much made the calculation that we could take any help we're going to get. For casinos, the plan right now would be to add 6 new casino licenses in the state, change the existing racetracks in the state, the 3 racetracks, to what are called racinos, which, of course, have traditional horse racing but also table games, and then also the ability to move Illinois' 10 existing casinos to on land and also to pick up and move anywhere that they want. So if the casino in Alton is not doing well and the owner decides, we can't really do Alton anymore, then they can pick a new city, or a new city can recruit that company and say, please come here, and then they'll have a revenue sharing agreement. And then, of course, sports betting, which is what the governor had prioritized in his budget address in February. He said, don't let this be a Christmas tree kind of thing. Please separate out sports betting so we are guaranteed to get that, because in the year since the U.S. Supreme Court said that sports betting is legal, a handful of other states, I believe it's like 7, 8, 9, something around that area, they have all legalized sports betting, and there's a race to get there. And then, of course, there's a race to against the underground black market offshore betting.
Hannah mentioned all those casino additions, expansions, you want to call it. Greg, one of those would be the city of Chicago?
Yes. Our new mayor has put down a marker here. She said that, hey, if you're going to really expand gambling, I really want a casino in my town, a city-owned casino, which may be a bit of a hard sell down there. Her argument has been that, well, she doesn't like gambling in theory, that in reality, all kinds of Chicagoans on the south side just drive over the Indiana border and go there, and they take a lot of money with them, and there's no reason why that money shouldn't be spent here to support our services. So she said that if that passes, she'd like to be part of it.
And can you clarify, Greg, why a city-owned casino would be a hard sell to some lawmakers?
Well, one is strictly money. If it's a city-owned casino, presumably the city gets more, and the state and other portions of the state get less. Two, that's something that no other area of the state has, and all the other riverboats are owned by private companies rather than municipality. So there's an equity issue. Hey, we couldn't cash in. And three, to be perfectly honest, there's some suspicion that crooked old Chicago, where half the city council's gone to the pokey in the last 25 or 30 years, how can we trust them to actually run a casino? The city's response to that is, well, we're going to have this layer of protection and all kinds of stern laws and reform, whatever, but there's going to be some skeptics.
And Brian, when it comes to gambling, we just mentioned about horse trading in a capital program, but certainly there's some of these things that would benefit people's districts as well. And I guess we could see something pop into that at the last minute as well if it meant a vote on some other key issue at the legislature.
No doubt. There are casinos, you know, that have been discussed all over the state, not only Chicago, but Rockford, Danville, Waukegan, everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of largesse to spread around here. And I think this is an interesting lesson in Illinois politics. If you'll remember, in the governor's, Hannah referred to the governor's budget address, he prioritized sports betting. He sort of said, you know, let's not make this a Christmas tree. The Christmas, everybody tries to do a Christmas tree every time we do a gambling bill. And sure enough, there have been many, many attempts at gambling legislation in the past decade plus, really since video gambling, oh, what was that, 10 years ago that was legalized, that have not come to fruition. And despite the governor's plea to not have this be a Christmas tree approach, that's exactly what we're ending up with. And people keep adding ornaments to the end. But, you know, as we said, as you said, Sean, that's pretty much how business gets done in Springfield.
Charlie, let me ask on something like that. And you've been following this gambling legislation since the, you know, certainly the first riverboat casinos and even before that.
I wrote the story for the Sun-Times when riverboat casinos were first authorized.
Why do these get so big? And I guess I look at this one here. I can see why this might get so big with a lot of different things added in, because if Chicago's able to get a casino, that takes the impetus, it seems to me, for gambling sort of off the table for many lawmakers. Once Chicago's in it, they don't care really about the rest of the state near as much. So I can understand why a Danville or a Rockford feel like this is their opportunity and they better be in the mix. But your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and if you look back on it, historically, all the gambling bills have been Christmas trees. As I recall, the bill that passed 20 years ago that allowed for boats to be docked began because the Jumer's Casino in Rock Island was having competition from across the river in Davenport, where the casino was land-based, and the Jumer's boat had to go out on the Mississippi, go upstream 1 hour, come downstream 1 hour, and let people off. And so they wanted to have the ability to stay docked. Well, then in came the people who had the casino in East Dubuque that wasn't doing well. I think they actually shut it down, and they wanted to move it to Rosemont. And there was a bunch of horse trading going on back and forth. Ultimately, part of it involved putting AstroTurf at Memorial Stadium in Champaign to win the vote of one of the Champaign-Urbana legislators. And we finally got a Christmas tree that was signed into law. And the opportunity for someone who's from a small area, doesn't have a lot of clout in terms of numbers, the area, to be able to say, I'll support this bill for Chicago, but I really want a casino down in southern Illinois on the Big Muddy River. That is how you put the bill together, and how, if you're a lawmaker, that's how you are able to get some of these for your community. City of Rockford has been running full-page ads in newspapers around the state arguing that it's time for Rockford to have a casino. And part of it is, I believe, there's a new casino going to open up just north of the border in Wisconsin. They're afraid that they're going to lose all those tax dollars going up there. And I think one of the things that doesn't get mentioned when we talk about a Chicago casino, think of the potential if it were located somewhere close to the Loop and you had all the tourists, all the conventioners who are there would have the opportunity to go to the casino of an evening. You'd be raking in a whole lot of money.
She doesn't want that. She wants it down on the southeast side.
How far down on the southeast side does she want it?
Steel Country.
Hmm.
Close to the Indiana border.
Southworks.
Hmm. Yeah, I would suggest that that's probably not the best place to make a lot of money, but that's only me. Well, you know, unless you put some dedicated mass transit route from the Loop down to the old Steel headquarters.
Well, I think her argument, Charlie, is that people manage to find their way across the border to Indiana so they can manage to find their way closer to home on the Illinois side of the border.
But do you think people who come to Chicago for a convention go to Indiana to gamble? I don't know. I'm just curious.
I would talk to her about it. All I know is she's made it real clear that she thinks that, like, that would be a better location.
They have Uber now. I guess that would help with that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I don't know if we want to close the loop on this conversation, but just something Charlie said struck me, and just the contrast between when we first legalized gambling in Illinois, we were clutching our pearls so tightly that we had to make these riverboats leave the shore and take this demon Games of Chance away from land for 2 hours, and now you can go to a gas station, practically every gas station in in Springfield has got 5 slot machines in it. We've come a very long way in a generation or two.
Well, and then at the beginning, Mayor Daley in Chicago said he didn't want any of those putt-putt boats in Chicago, and the original law would not have allowed boats in Cook County or on the on Lake Michigan.
Hannah, let's move on to the topic of marijuana, recreational marijuana, making that legal in the state. Give us just a quick update on where that's at. I know there's still a lot of negotiating taking place.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's been hours and hours and hours of meetings this week. There's a lot to be worked out, not to mention a legalization of a completely new industry. But there's a lot of factors when we talk about expungement of records, which is a critical point that Democrats and especially the Black and Latino caucuses are trying to get in the bill. You know, there's a lot of voices that have to weigh in, particularly from law enforcement. We've got 102 counties in Illinois, and so there is a lot that's going on there. So this week, Republicans, a couple came to me and they said, we're not going to be able to put any votes on this marijuana bill. And they said negotiations favored the Black caucus. And so I go to the Black caucus and they say, well, I mean, one, we literally have more votes on this side than the paltry number of votes that Republicans might have been able to put on the bill. And then also, expungement is the point. Expungement is the point. And it's not about enriching people who are going to be able to get into the marijuana business, but expungement is the point, and equity in getting those licenses set up for people who are, you know, minorities to actually own these businesses and to profit in a legal way from something that's been destroying communities because of the unequal law enforcement of pot and other drugs in the, you know, decades-long drug war. And so the Black caucus said, you know, it's kind of silly for the GOP to be upset that they can't put any votes on this because that's their choice.
Well, let's, at the start of the show, I mentioned that we now see a new mayor in charge in the city of Chicago. Lori Lightfoot was sworn in this week. She took some quick action in her first few days. And Greg, I know you've been following both the campaign and now the new mayor taking over. I wanted to get your impressions of her first week on the job.
She's not going to. She's going to be an interesting lady. She's going to be trying to do a lot of stuff. We'll find out if she's trying to do too much. She clearly picked a fight right away with much of the city council's old guard. With her committee appointment, she got involved, which some people thought she wouldn't be. Ed Burke would be replaced as head of the finance committee by Scott Wagasbeck, which is really a night and day transition here. We'll find out next week when the new city council meets whether she's got the votes to do this. I think she does, and I understand why she did it. Lightfoot won because, in large part, because she was an agent of change. Throw the bums out. We're tired of business as usual, particularly at the city council level. And you know, assuming she has the votes, that was the right thing to do politically. It was the right thing to do in terms of government too, because you can be anything in Chicago as a mayor, but you can't be weak. You have to lead rather than be led. Lightfoot has made it real clear from these actions that she intends to be in control of her own destiny. And that having been said, this is just Act 1. The bigger act to come is how she's going to pay off a huge city budget deficit that seems to be well north of $700 million a year. She's going to need some aldermen to take some tough votes to close some holes and raise some money and whatever. And she may, in the end, rue having irritated some of these guys with her organization that she's going to need to later vote for her tax plans.
Just a couple of minutes left here. And Brian, I'm going to go to you on this. We've been seeing some very restrictive abortion laws being both proposed and even passed and signed into law in some states. Not here in Illinois. We know that's probably not going to happen, not that type of legislation. But we are watching some other pieces, some other measures that are out there that deal with reproductive rights that now it looks like could start moving in the final days of the session.
Yeah, this is an issue that Illinois has been sort of anticipating a potential crackdown or even a U.S. Supreme Court reversal of the Roe versus Wade decision. And so there was this legislation that passed a couple of years ago. Governor Rauner was, it's one of the things that a lot of observers say helped his doom his candidacy, his eventual general election candidacy, and it almost cost him the Republican primary, where Illinois passed a law at that time to say if Roe versus Wade was overturned, that Illinois abortions would still remain legal. And lawmakers are still saying that there are a number of other laws on the books that they need to sort of take off. They haven't been enforced in Illinois in decades in some cases, if ever. But they want to take them off the books. Well, this bill came up earlier this year, and then it was sort of sent into purgatory, into subcommittee purgatory. It wasn't going to move forward. Fast forward a couple of months, all these other states are going in very opposite direction, passing a lot of restrictive laws. There's been a national upsurge in protest about this, and now the Democrats, the House Democrats, have a three-hour caucus meeting this week, and at the end of it, we are told the House Speaker told the lead sponsor of this legislation, okay, you can move this bill forward, you can put it, send it to whatever committee you want.
Okay, well, we'll continue to watch for that. Only a week to go in the legislative session. A lot of these issues will be decided or not over the next several days. We'll continue to watch for that. Time now for our notes from the field, and Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, we've talked about the budget and the fact we alluded to the fact that we had that April spike. Well, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, the legislature's fiscal gurus, if you will, came out with its official revision of the estimate for 2019 revenues update, and then the estimate for 2020. And they've updated FY19 to take into account the extraordinary jump in April. They've also updated their projections for FY2020 by a total of $770 million. And they point out that you have to be cautious because a large portion of the April spike was due not to what you might say the underlying basic form of income taxation based on salaries and wages that people receive, but in part by an increase in payment on dividends and capital gains, which they note are very volatile, depend on market conditions. So they're being kind of cautious. The governor's projected a larger figure for FY20, and the commission is trying to be more conservative.
Okay, Greg?
The last governor's race was fought largely over the question of the sad state of Illinois' economy, with the state losing jobs amid this huge war that Bruce Ryan got into over tax rates and structural reforms or whatever. Well, lo and behold, having just raised taxes once, and with our new governor raising taxes, proposing to raise taxes again, both the graduate tax and all the taxes for these capital plans, the state's jobs economy all of a sudden has kicked into high drive. Maybe that's Donald Trump, or maybe Bruce Rauner's economics were wrong, but this last month, according to the Illinois Department of Employment Security, the state added 80,600 jobs year-to-year over a year ago. That's 1.3%. It's beginning to actually approach national rates. We haven't been at the national growth rates, and heaven knows forever. It certainly provides some ammunition for the governor and proponents of the graduated income tax to say, see, raising taxes isn't necessarily fatal. It doesn't kneecap you when you want to expand your economy.
Okay, that's all the time we got for this week, and I want to thank our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, also Hannah Meisel, and Greg Hines. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.